You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Kia tau te rangi marie, o rangi nui e tui honei, o papu tuanuku e takatonei, o te tai o e awhinei I a tātou, tihei mauri ora. This is The Green Desk on 95BFM.
This week's Green Desk focuses on the state of our fishing industry in New Zealand. Mitchell talks to the Executive Director of Greenpeace, Russell Norman, about the government's feeble attempts to advocate for sustainable fishing, rather letting biased politicians and big-time corporations control what goes on in our oceans and what goes through our parliament. Mitchell begins by asking about the damming report that was released in 2016, which brought light to the issue.
So this is Operation Bronto, Maxi and Mini, which are three compliance investigations that was done by the Fisheries Division of the Ministry of Primary Industry, looking at the deep sea hooky or hokey fishery. And what they were looking at was systemic non-compliance with the law in that fishery, and they found masses of evidence of it with pretty much all the major seafood companies. And that's things like, for example, lots and lots of dumping, illegal dumping of fish. So the fish that they catch are of a completely different profile in terms of their lengths to the fish that they bring into the port. So basically all the little ones are dumped overboard, which is unlawful. They also found there was enormous carton weight mislabeling going on. So when the cartons would come off the ships, that they would be labelled as much lighter than they really were, which was a way to, of course, hide more, catching more fish than they were reporting and needed quota for. And the MPI compliance appeals at the time, and that was Tallies that were doing that, MPI said that this was, in their opinion, unlawful behaviour by Tallies. There was a lot of other ways of rorting the system. So, for example, if you catch fish at sea and then you process them at sea into fillets and then you land the fillets, the question is how much of quota do you need? Because you need quota for what's called the green fish, the fish you actually catch rather than the fillets you process. So there's a conversion factor. Now, you can play with that conversion factor so that you have to report a lot less fish being caught than is really caught. So there were multiple, many, many different ways that these companies were found to be basically in breach of the quota management system and all the rules around it.
So say if they were prosecuted, which I know they weren't, what would the implications of that have been at the time?
Well, under the Fisheries Act, there's pretty severe penalties for breaches and, you know, up to including big fines and losing your fishing boat. So, yeah, I mean, they were, you know, they were facing big penalties.
And so why do you reckon the MPI didn't prosecute these, or Tallies in particular?
Well, it's a... The short answer is I don't know. The longer answer is there's a real pattern of behaviour. There's a whole series of these compliance reports that were leaked to us where the compliance division, the people who enforce the rules, found lots of unlawful behaviour, recommended prosecutions, and at some senior level within the MPI, the Fisheries Division, those prosecutions were blocked. So that's quite a pattern of behaviour. And of course, we don't know exactly why they were blocking them, and we can only guess. The second kind of line of evidence is that when finally they were asked why didn't prosecute MPI, what they said was, look, if we prosecute them, we find that in 4 years' time, they're just doing the same thing again. This is what Gary Orr said, who was the head of compliance on national radio. So he was quite upfront that these kind of organisations were engaged in this unlawful activity. If you prosecute them, these fishing companies, they just keep doing it anyway. So he decided that was a reason not to prosecute them.
Okay, so that's a bit weird to me. But instead of prosecuting them, why did they not implement mechanisms on the boats, such as like cameras, so that they could actually continually hold people to account to make sure that it wouldn't happen again in 4 years? It just, that would be this new standard.
Yeah, that's it's a good question. Yeah, so what we've got with MPI is just a very long record now, all on the record now, of them not enforcing the law. I mean, there was a great email which we got under the OIA by the Director of Fisheries Management where he was talking about unlawful dumping, where they dump fish they're not allowed to dump when they catch them. And he said, look, if we enforce the law about unlawful dumping, half the inshore fleet would go bankrupt, so they weren't going to do that.
Okay.
I mean, they just made a decision a long time ago that they weren't going to enforce the law on fishing companies, and they don't.
Okay, and now I just want to talk a bit about Shane Jones. Do you think that the current, well, I know in the national government was starting to look at putting in cameras, and that has just completely been squashed by the Labor government. Do you want to talk about what Shane Jones is up to and why this isn't happening under the new Labor government, who should be or really looking after these kind of industries and our fishing stocks and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, we'd been running a long campaign to get cameras on boats and had forced the previous government to agree to do it, and they'd rolled out the regulations and were starting to do the tendering process, and we were making sure that we blocked one of the tenders because they wanted to get the seafood industry to do it to themselves through a company called Trident. But we stopped that one, and so then there was going to be an independent camera company, and then MPI were going to monitor the footage, because originally the way MPI wanted to do it is the seafood companies would monitor the footage. So we kind of got them on a reasonably good path, and then there was a change of government. And obviously the new government came in with New Zealand First in it. And New Zealand First historically, but particularly Shane Jones, have had a close relationship with the fishing industry and have had a big influence on fisheries policy. And no doubt part of that influence is to put pressure not to have cameras on boats, because they've been quite open that they're opposed to cameras on boats. And though that whole camera program has now stopped.
And, you know, well, Shane Jones, obviously he's got some power, but at the end of the day, it's up to Stuart Nash, right? So is he just being sort of bullied, or is he just incompetent?
It's not a simple question to answer, to be honest. I mean, so Labor needs New Zealand First in order to be in government and to keep the government together. New Zealand First have obviously made fishing policy and their interventions in fishing policy an important issue, which they've prioritised in any discussion. And Labor have consequently backed down. And Nash has been essentially forced to implement that backdown. And he now is kind of saying all sorts of things that don't make any sense, because he's in a very invidious position, of course, because he's implementing a policy which is not the Labor Party policy, it's the opposite of the Labor Party policy, but he's the fisheries minister, so he finds himself having to defend it even though it doesn't make any sense.
So I'm just wondering, I'm not a political expert or anything, that's why I'm going to ask you this question, but I know that he was given 10K behind his campaign or something like that. Is that actually like legal? Is it a conflict of interest? Is it somewhat mild corruption in terms of letting all these things slide because he's receiving money for his campaign?
The thing is that we have a system where large companies and individuals can lawfully give very large amounts of money to political party. And of course, if a company gives a money to a political party, you've got to ask the question why. What are they, you know, why would they spend some of their shareholders' money on that, given that they have a fiduciary duty under the Companies Act only to spend money to advance the interests of the company? And so you can't help but ask the question, why is money being paid? What is it that they hope to achieve? Is it that they just want to support democracy? They're great believers in democracy, so they want to support democracy. Or is it that they're hoping that they could have some influence on policy that might affect their industry? And that's clearly the question that we need to ask in a democracy.
So this is my next question, is more focused on tallies now. They've recently been done for fishing in protected waters. What's the go with that? So their current boat has been blacklisted for doing it, and now the government is advocating for it to be taken off the list. Is that correct?
Yeah, so if you're outside the New Zealand exclusive economic zone, so in international waters, there's these other bodies that kind of try to regulate it, called Regional Fisheries Management Organisations, and this one's called the South Pacific Regional Fisheries Management Organisation, or SPRIFMO, very catchy. Anyway, they put in place a ban on bottom trawling in a certain area of the Tasman. Bottom trawling is when you have these great big heavy metal nets and you drag them along the bottom and destroy all the coral and all the sponges and everything that's growing on the ocean floor in order to catch some of the fish that are down there. It's kind of like destroying an entire forest to catch some pigeons. And these corals are literally 1,000 years old. They're slow-growing cold water coral. So there's moves afoot to try to protect it. Of course, the fishing industry is trying to push back. So this was an area which was protected. Tallies went in there and fished in there. There's no dispute about that. And then they were put on this draft international blacklist of fishing boats that are in breach of the international protections. And then at a meeting of this SPRIFMO, or the compliance committee of the SPRIFMO, New Zealand, what normally happens is if you're on the draft blacklist, you either go into the full blacklist or you take them up altogether. And New Zealand kind of tried to make an argument that said they should stay on the draft blacklist for a bit longer, for another year. Well, New Zealand dealt with it. And the other countries pushed back, basically. And so there was some kind of compromise reached where it's basically still on a draft blacklist of IUU vessels, these unlawful vessels that are operating at the high seas because of New Zealand's intervention. At the same time, there's been 14 charges laid against tallies under New Zealand law, because it's a breach of New Zealand law as well. well, and those charges, they get their first hearing in Nelson in February.
And what do you think now, just onto the treaty, what does this all mean for that? Like, obviously, the government's going pretty hard to support fishing above certain things like protected areas. What does this mean for the treaty that's coming up? Because I know they've released a scientific report saying that 30% of the, is it the world's waters that need to be protected to protect species and biodiversity?
Yeah, so this is currently there isn't a kind of routine, legally enforceable protection that anyone can introduce. It's quite difficult to introduce international law, under international law, marine protected areas in the high sea, so outside anyone's exclusive economic zone. And that's about half the surface of the planet is high seas. And so there's an attempt by the UN to build an oceans treaty that would actually have legally enforceable marine protected areas. There's some places where you can currently, but mostly not. And so there's a negotiation underway. It's supposed to be completed in April 2020. And there's two models. One is that there would be a convention of the parties where everyone comes together and designates certain areas of the ocean as marine protected areas. And the other model is that it be delegated to these regional fisheries management organisations to decide. The problem with delegating it to these regional fisheries management organisations is that they have very strong influence of the fishing industry within them. They've been performed very poorly in the past in terms of protecting the marine environment. So that's the model that New Zealand's supporting, and basically that means there won't be proper protection to the high sea.
Okay. And is there a possible way, I know this is an international thing run by the UN, but is there a way that people can sort of get involved in this and like sort of advocate for the government to tighten up on this and do that?
Yeah, I mean, the key thing really is for fisheries policy to be removed from the influence of New Zealand first. I mean, that's really at the heart of it. And that's both domestic fishing policy and international fishing policy. And that's really what we're kind of trying to do, because the way it is at the moment is disastrous for the environment.
And I probably should have asked this at the beginning, but do you have any statistics on, like, what's the current trend with our fishing stocks? What's it looking like at the moment?
It's not easy to tell because most of even the quota species that are inside the quota management system, there's no evidence or very little evidence about what happens. There's not a lot of science done on it. What you see, though, is, for example, the Hauke or Hauke fishery that we were talking about earlier, that fishery just collapsed, the West Coast Hauke fishery. So the fishing industry will go, everything's fine, and it's like, oh, no, everything's not fine. And then they made a big song and dance about handing back quota as they were great environmental guardians. They said, oh, we're handing back some quota to protect the fishery. Well, of course, that quota was of zero value because they literally couldn't catch the fish because they were no longer there. So you know, the rock lobster quota is exactly the same off the East Coast of North Island now. There's like, they're down to less than 1% of the original biomass if the thing's completely collapsed.
Sure.
And this just happens over and over. Orange roughy, of course, is the most famous example. Very long-lived fish that the fishing industry absolutely destroyed. And all of those, they all had to be closed because they literally destroyed all the fish. So Hokies in that situation now.
Just something on the quota part of that. I saw that you wrote something about the new government, although they're now going to hold people to account for dumping, have actually boosted the quota by 30%. Was that for Hoki as well? Or?
No, that's what it is that the fishing industry are basically, what the game that I think they're playing is they're saying, look, we're willing to stop unlawfully dumping fish if you increase our quota. Essentially, that's the kind of negotiation going. And so, you know, 30% is one number that's been thrown around. If we increase their quota by 30%, they'll agree not to break the law. Of course, they also say there won't be cameras on boats, so there's no way we can tell that they're no longer breaking the law. So yep. it's a joke. That's what they want.
And it's my understanding there's no longer going to be an independent inquiry held by the government into the legal dumping.
Yeah, or anything. So it was part of Labor policy and Green policy that there be an independent inquiry into what the fisheries management system and what's been going on. But New Zealand First have stopped that, and instead there'll be just a review that's run by Ministry of Primary Industries, which of course is the regulator that's been captured by the fishing industry. So yeah, that's completely gone.
Is there anything else you want to add, Russell?
I mean, if we're going to have, you know, a long-term future on this planet, you know, more than half of the surface of this planet is covered by ocean. We need to actually be sustainable in our use of the oceans when we go out there and take fish and so forth. We have nothing like sustainable regulation of our fishing industry at the moment. And until we're willing to do that, I think we're condemning ourselves and our kids to a pretty bleak future.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.